Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss The Acolyte, currently airing on Disney+. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by the rest of my Jedi Investigation Squad. Kat Benish is here. Hi, Kat.
Hello. Hi. Hello.
Nailed it. Tony Sindelar is also here. Hi, Tony.
Also, hello. Hi.
So what I was actually thinking as your intro is, and I decided not to interrupt, though I usually interrupt, is podcasting actually a complicated profession?
Speaking as a professional podcaster, yes.
Depends on the company you keep.
Is it the podcasting or is it the editing?
No, it's the podcasting. Well, really? It depends on the show. Is it this show?
This show
is complicated.
Why is it complicated? It just feels like we're hanging out and chatting.
I think you know.
Okay.
Wow. Should I leave?
No, this is the only
sounded,
reason we
that sounded more like a nervous laughter than a sincere laughter. I have important news. Earlier today, I was on Random Pursuit, which is a game show on the Incomparable Network. Mild spoiler for an episode of that game show. I did get Random Pursuit uses cards from many editions of Trivial Pursuit, including the Star Wars Trivial.
Do you get the question, Pursuit. How many times did the X-Wing shoot?
I know, but I got a how many question, which are garbage questions, which I want to throw out, and
didn't
do great. Spoiler, no. We'll do this. This works great for podcasting. I want you both to think about this.
Okay.
We're back in our member special where we answer trivia questions.
This is like an ad for our member special.
Yeah.
Where we did the Star Wars Trivial, which was mainly kind of like
there
a
was
campaign
zero
in
cheating.
Could Kat like destroy Dan and how many laws would be broken to get there?
No. He's so good at trivia. I just feel like if we were playing by the normal rules, it would just be unfair for the rest of us. And so,
We have to invent new rules.
New rules. Yeah.
But anyway, here is a question that I got wrong that I'm curious if either of you got right. And we're going to do this so it's not a spoiler.
Okay.
You're going to communicate by holding up a number of fingers.
Okay.
How many Star Destroyers did the Millennium Falcon evade when leaving Tatooine, parentheses presumably in A New Hope? All right.
Oh, Tatooine. Tatooine.
Dan, Tatooine, little desert planet.
I know.
Keep your eyes closed.
Which edition?
There's no information provided. So, how many Star Destroyers?
I got 50-50 on it. I'm trying to. I'm picturing it in my head.
All right. Well, Kat is holding up fingers. Okay. I need you to hold some fingers too, Dan. Okay. You have both said different numbers.
Kat.
One of you is right, and it's not Dan.
Yeah.
It's Kat.
I took the one I was less sure about.
I put up this number, and I was wrong. So we won't say what it was. This is like a tease for a game show podcast that is not related to this podcast directly.
I was about to say, why are you saying the numbers, Tony? Like, how is that? Is that really a spoiler for like a show that happened 50 years ago?
Well, it's a spoiler for a game show that I recorded earlier today.
Yeah, but like, so, is that really a spoiler?
Some of us hold ourselves to a high level of ethical standards. It depends. I don't know.
Some of us don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't said who those people are because that would be a spoiler for the end when we are judged. I don't know. Anyway,
Jason listened to all these scores of and ties them up to let us know whether or not we are truly ethical podcasters, and that's why podcasting is so complicated.
He's got an intern to do that. It's all automated.
We are here to discuss episode six of The Acolyte, entitled
pretty good 6 minutes in
Teach/Corrupt. So whoever predicted the slashes would herald episodes where the twins were split up again.
Well done.
Ding 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 ding. 10 points.
What was that? Was that you? Or are you just giving?
No, I think it was.
I think it was a listener.
A listener definitely told us that.
I just don't know which listener.
Not keeping track of who that was, but consider yourself warmed by the fact that you've earned 10 points for yourself.
We did not remember your name. Tony was unclear if it was somebody on the podcast or not, but somewhere someone is impressed with you.
And we are keeping score
of something.
You guys should have a big whiteboard in the background of mine.
Who's to say we don't?
Kat has a whiteboard. I mean, it's just in her office, not my office.
It's actually in the attic.
Oh, okay. Never mind. There's a whiteboard available, I guess, is the answer.
Hmm.
Once again, a split plot episode in which we have two parallel plots with May on the ship with Saul as they flee the planet, and Osha waking up with Chimer on some unknown planet.
Unknown planet.
Well, I was trying to do the high level thing.
Good job.
But I will tell the story about how Kat and I, we were watching the opening where he's on the, where we see Osha wake up and like go out and it's a rocky planet. And
Can I say before that? So like literally on my Instagram feed, which has me down to a number, it's like, here are the 10 places that Star Wars a film that you should go to.
You mentioned this last week. You told us the exact story
last week. Interesting. I have no... Anyways, Madeira and was it Michael Skellig?
No, that's Skellig Michael. Skellig Michael. Where, yeah, so
yes.
We were watching this and it's like, we're kind of, you know, like giving each other the side eye, like, is this the island where Luke is?
Octo, I believe.
Yes. Yeah. And she's like, does that have a name? Octo. We're like, well, we don't know. And like, then the title card goes and then the next thing is unknown planet. Then we're like, oh, you got us, Star Wars.
It is. We're pretty sure that's the planet, though.
I don't think it is.
Really?
I don't think so. There's no porgs. They have weird little rocks.
They have little elephants.
Elephant
spheres.
It's a massive planet. You think the entire planet is covered in porgs?
Island was covered in porgs.
That one island. This may not be the same island. Also, this was what?
How many Jedi are on this planet?
Okay, this is probably what, 40 years beforehand? No,
oh,
this
no.
is like...
It's 100
years. Okay, it is completely believable that a colony of porgs get established on this island after...
Oh, you think
episode.
They're brought in by colonizers later as like a
an invasive species.
Porgs are like rats. They're coming in.
Do porgs swim?
I don't think we canonically know.
Yeah.
We know there are other creatures also on this planet. There's like the little they're in this deleted
elephant
scene.
Quail.
No, like little creatures. They're in the deleted scene with Luke. So in my mind, I think this is that planet. And until I'm told otherwise, that's what I'll believe.
Well, why would they say unknown planet then? Unknown to whom?
Exactly. It's unknown to...
to you, the listener and the viewer. Okay.
And
you don't know this planet.
And
Osha, tell me.
Osha doesn't know. We're doing this through Osha's eyes. Osha also doesn't know what's in that soup. The soup isn't labeled either.
Never eat unlabeled soup. That's just a good life lesson for you.
Okay. So everything in your life have labels on it?
I've watched The Bear.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. It's got. I cut my little masking tape. Yeah.
100%. If you see things with a ragged edge, do you tantrum in the walk-in?
Lock myself in the freezer, yeah.
So you guys drink about this, but this is like one of the best innovations, I think, in my life is keeping a Sharpie in the kitchen, and every time you open something, write on the Sharpie when you opened it.
On the Sharpie, that's really
sorry. Writing on the thing that when you open it. Like, it is so nice to know, how old is that yogurt? Actually, how long has that chicken broth been in the fridge? It's been phenomenal. Literally life-changing.
Just to also point out, it doesn't get expired things out of our fridge any faster, but at least we know what
they are.
Yeah.
But there's a paper trail. I like that you are way more excited to talk about your kitchen life hacks than you were about anything else today. The amount of joy you had in your face telling us about having a Sharpie. Anyway.
I recommend it, folks. I do think this was a good episode.
Counterpoint, don't do that and be sad and eat spoiled food. There we go. We're equal. Sadly,
spoiled
our podcast requires...
is so gross.
Yeah, and yet here, I can't stop drinking it because I have to. The ways in which I live my life, it's a code, people, and you can't do much about that.
Man's got to have a code, Tony.
Yeah, the rules of this podcast where we have to give equal sides to both part of a debate it's painful, but it's gotten us where we are today.
So I was just like,
rebuttal?
I think this is basically Skellig Michael. That is my point. This is Skellig Michael.
Yeah, Octo in Star Wars parlance.
Such a stupid name.
The Star Wars or any of the planets good names?
Hoth.
Dantooine?
Dantooine is derivative of Tantooine.
But it's Dan's Tatooine, basically.
It's my Tatooine. There's also,
Hoth is
I believe,
good.
There Hoth is a Mantooine as well.
Yeah.
Because that's how we roll.
It's like, yeah, is that like, four of those it's pretty all good. Men?
Yeah. Yeah, don't go there.
Yeah.
Yavin 4, Yavin, Hoth, Corellia, Coruscant.
Yavin 4 is not actually technically really a name then. They're basically just saying like...
Yavin's 1 through 3.
Presumably Yavin's the gas giant and you're a moon.
It's a moon.
Yeah.
But you didn't even get a name, right? So you're just Yavin 4.
Well, it's kind
they didn't even get around to being like,
yeah, but I love how that, what that implies. It implies that, like, yeah.
There's
that
more there's, than one Yavin.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. We're not going to, we have, there are things literally in our Celestials that are like, I don't know, Asteroid 17. There's such a thing as this.
You don't think like Alderaan, just like a few too many A's?
Hmm.
There,
couple? There's three A's. It's a lot of A's. Anyway.
I don't know how to respond to that.
I know. That was the goal. Anyway, nailed it.
I think the new purpose of this podcast is just to outrage one of us at a time.
New purpose?
Take turns.
Well.
Anyways, where were we?
We have gotten to unknown planet. Roughly 8 seconds into this episode when text objectionable text appears on the screen.
It's not objectionable. I just think they're, I would like to think that, I mean, there is.
let's really unpack this.
No, yeah. No, because I had to remind Dan while watching this that.
Can any planet truly be unknown? What
can
does
you really
that mean?
Know yourself?
Or a planet.
So on mm-hmm. Skellig Michael, or Octo, as we're now going to call it, some might call it. No, remember how Ray goes into the cave and does that whole thing with the mirror and the snapping when she's like trying out for a jazz musician scene?
Yes.
I feel like they never really came back to that.
Nope. Exactly. And if this is like full on, it's like, this is our chance to come back and say, what is going on that planet? Let's find out more.
I don't think it has anything to do with the planet. So
I will be so upset if that's
true. Does Luke going into that cave and seeing Darth Vader and then it's him inside the mask have anything to do with the cave? I think that's all just...
They do go back and explain that in one of the books.
Well, though. In a book, yes. Oh, but that's been decanonized, I believe.
Oh, is it so Splinter of the Mind's Eye? Or is it
Splinter of the Mind's Eye, yeah.
I thought they talked about it in one of the Zahn books, too.
Okay.
Essentially,
okay, 13 minutes in, we talked about the Zahn books.
Yeah, these woods are haunted.
I think that essentially the upshot was like Yoda fights a dark Jedi there. And kills him.
Yoda,
and that's
Yoda
like,
graffiti that tree.
Buries him in a cave because Yoda is a creepy serial killer.
You know,
that's why there are no
busy.
Sith guys. Yoda keeps killing them and burying them in caves.
So wait a minute. He goes into hiding at a place where he buried a body? That's really
Oh
bad.
No, I think the guy finds him there.
No.
And he pulls
like Tony's version better.
He pulls like a Khmer thing where he's
okay,
like, you've
so
seen
you
my
to
face,
like,
I gotta murder you.
So it'd have to be like an Inquisitor, basically.
Yeah.
Except it
the Inquisitors came later. Now we're crossing streams.
Yeah. All right.
Anyway.
So,
on to
so
the
then
next...
he's like, yeah, kid, go on a vision quest in that tree where I buried a guy. Have I mentioned I'm creepy? I'm going to eat all your granola bars if you don't come back.
The vibes there are totally chill. Okay. What's next, Dan?
We are
Dan, keep
6
going.
Seconds in. Yeah.
Yep.
Dan.
Stop. Keep startling.
So the... Our two parallel stories here are Chimer trying to basically bring Osha over to his point of view and Saul being if there's an issue with this episode, I think it's what does Saul know and when does Saul know it? Because the episode kind of wants to play that ambiguous, but also it just comes across being like confusing.
Well, my big theory here is at the end of the day is like something happened on that planet. Also, I'm pretty sure. Fascinating that Saul wants it. I know I'm just completely jumping here. Saul's going to turn himself into the Jedi, then changes his mind. I kind of forget exactly what happens there. And then he just blasts off to hyperspace. Everyone raise your hand so our listeners can see. Do we all think Saul is going to the unknown planet? Because that's where I think he's headed.
I think he might be going to Brendok.
That's also a possible option, I guess. Yeah, sure. Okay,
I don't think
maybe.
He knows where the unknown planet is.
But we don't know. It's unknown. It's unknown.
It could be anywhere.
It could be Brendok.
Yeah.
It could be next door.
So I would say what, I enjoyed this episode. I think what makes it a little tricky, you've got the two stories with the two sisters who've done their parent trap. Though, I guess,
one of them unwittingly.
One of them unwittingly, and you know the stranger knows what's going on. He has not been fooled. There was not really an intent or an attempt to fool him. But I feel like the Osha story is probably playing out over the course of maybe hours, and the May story is maybe playing out over the course of minutes.
I would agree.
So it's a little tricky going back and forth because it makes some of the stuff on the ship with May and Saul be like, what is going on? Unless you assume it doesn't take very long, basically.
It also feels a little bit like there's two... They acknowledge that by making some filler, where it's like, oh, the power shut down for reasons.
Yeah.
Go check on that.
What is Basil trying to do?
What is Basil's goal?
His goal never makes sense.
He's griefing her. Pip gets reset. maybe. And then when May finally comes back and starts needling Saul more, he eventually stuns her.
Yeah, but Saul must have been told. I think Saul was told by Basil, but they're not entirely explicit about that.
They want, again, I think they want you to, they want to do a misdirect, but it ends up being confusing because we don't know what he knows when he knows it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
because especially, I mean, I think what is particularly confusing to viewers, and I saw folks in the Incomparable Slack being confused about it, because it's like, he calls for help, basically.
Yeah.
And then he's like, never mind, I'm leaving.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
And they have the weird, like, hyperspace moment where he leaves just as they arrive. I almost feel like, don't even show them arriving, right? Or I guess they have to show them arriving, because then they're on, and then they're down on the surface having their own investigation.
Yes.
But it's like, yeah, just
which
have him, yeah.
Is also, let's go back to my working theory again, that the green lady, please remind me of her name.
Vernestra.
She does a classic, like almost like a Cicero type rhetorical device there of like, oh, what an interesting theory you point, like leading that, the junior Boy Scout to the theory of that Saul did this.
I do want to put a pin in that because there's a letter that deals with it that I think is really interesting, but I want to come back to it when we get to the letters.
Vernestra also has a lightsaber whip, which I feel like was one of the scenes in the trailer that people were excited about.
But I still go back. I have never had good vibes about Vernestra. If this episode is all about vibes, Vernestra,
the thing
not
I'm
good
interested
vibes.
The most about that is an established character in like the High Republic books and comics and seems to be a popular one. And I'm kind of curious if it's like, okay, if they make her evil, is that weird? Because like she's a character who's a following, and then we decided in this totally other vein, like over here in this media, she's evil or something.
It would be like if there was a huge group of fandom around, say, Yord, and then they killed
him. Yord Horde, call out to Yord Horde.
It is slightly worse if you know, people love you and then they discover at the end of the media that you're a villain. Like people who named their children Daenerys. Or all those people who watched a lot of The Boys before finding out that the fascist guy is bad, which I think about all the time now.
I do think there's a possibility that it's again that she is not evil, but she's so engaged in the politics of keeping the Jedi out that like the sacrifices that she's willing to make are
and is in
enables
this episode,
the rise.
Well, that's
where we have a little bit of a phone call where it's like some senator is trying to move in on the Jedi Council and take away some of their autonomy or something.
Exactly.
That kind of gives
us, it
felt like, let me give you a little bit of her motivation. It's that, you know, things aren't great for the Jedi Council right now. And so a cover up would make sense even for a non-evil character.
Right. Yeah. I was thinking to myself, like the corollary of like, oh, you didn't read that one comic where Chewbacca is a mass murderer or something like that. Feels like the kind of bait.
Sorry.
Level.
Is that real?
No.
Okay. I don't know.
There is a comic where C-3PO is a serial killer. No, he's switched with another droid who looks just like him as a serial killer. Never mind. That's real. That's C-3PX. I'm sorry.
It's not your fault. You didn't make him. Or did you?
That's not right.
Anyway. So I think the pacing is tricky in Saul and May's story a little bit because it's also one that feels like it's entirely dependent on us, like, on the penny dropping and like him figuring out, and you're just kind of waiting for him to figure out or acknowledge that he knows who it is. And so it feels like they drag that plot out a bit to try and build tension, but it ends up being a little,
well, the whole parent trap ends up being kind of disappointing, right? I mean,
yeah,
because I mean, she gets found out relatively quickly. It's unclear to
me. May. Yeah.
May. Yeah. Did Saul reveal anything big to May that, like, I mean,
he,
I guess he has
one
said he will now.
That he's like, I'm going to turn myself in and tell them everything or something.
Yeah. Which again implies something else happened on that planet.
Yeah.
And he talks a little bit too about feeling. Doesn't he talk a little bit too about the having sensed the stranger beforehand?
Mm-hmm. He mentions that he sensed. In the last episode, he says he seemed familiar. He said something familiar.
Yes, okay. What's that episode? Sorry.
I'm going to put a pin. I'm going to put in a prediction too.
How many pins and predictions do you get, Dan?
Yeah.
Oh, this is a prediction.
Okay.
I don't know the answer to this.
Shoot.
Because of the way they're doing the parallelism of these titles, I'm going to bet that next episode is called Fate, which is the mirror to the episode 3 flashback
Destiny.
That was Destiny.
Ooh, Fate,
that's
Destiny.
My throw out there.
That'd be
nice. Nice pairing. Yeah.
So I agree with you. So basically, then there's to take a step back, right? So you were kicking us off, but just to sort of structure those of this. One, there's three plots, right? There's Osha and the Stranger. There's May and Saul. And then there's the plot back on
Coruscant, yeah.
No, Coruscant, and then to
Kofar.
Kofar with, again, the Boy Scout.
Yeah, I was when they went to Kofar, and I was like, "What? We're going back here?" But yeah. The story has moved on.
And they very speedily like, "Let's just can you point us towards the pile of dead Jedi,
the woods?" Yeah, can you take us to where the mask killings in the woods happen?
And it was interesting. They're like, "Oh, well, there was like the Beatles have hatched last night, so like it could have been the Beatles." And they get out. There's like these
Ringo
aren't
is vicious. I think. See, the main reason I kind of ding the. Or the May Saul plot is because I think the Osha Chimer plot or Stranger plot is really good.
It's phenomenal. Like, yeah. It's again, so interesting.
Manny Jacinto, I think, does a great job with his character. I love that he's like letting her grab the lightsaber and everything and just being like, I'm just going to make some soup. You hungry?
I'm literally going to go jump in the water and swim around. Yep. And either if you're not going to join me, like, you want to kill me? I don't know what's going on. It's just the confidence. There was I saw a great interview with him briefly talking about how much he enjoyed playing this role. And also, it is really, really weird to see an interview with him and realize, like, he doesn't sound like Bortles. Oh, sorry. Yeah, like Jason Bortles. Jason Mendoza.
Bortles is an actual football player.
It's just a thing he says a lot.
It's been many years since I saw that. It was during COVID. Yeah. Yeah, Jason Mendoza, like no, he's actually, you know, a very well-spoken.
You're saying that he's an actor? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and quite good. It's very jarring. But he said that he really loved playing the two characters, and he said that Chimer was very based on Jack Sparrow, and like very strong Jack Sparrow energy. And with The Stranger, he's very enjoyed much the stillness, and mostly using his voice to use the sort of power and confidence and strangeness, which I think definitely shows like how he carries himself, and just watching it again, of just like how still he is when he presents.
I also think that what the Chimer Stranger Osha plot moves forward in a way that the May Saul plot feels more like spinning its wheels to get to the revelation that Saul has. Because the Stranger's talking about things that he used to be a Jedi. He's very old, it seems like. He does comment about it being like a long, long time ago in a galaxy far. No, in this galaxy, but a while ago. He has the comment about being betrayed. By his he's got the scars, and like he then plays off sort of Osha's thing about like where she's like, oh, I left, which I think is not kind of what I was given to understand by the earlier episodes. You know, it's like, hey, we agreed to part ways, but actually you were kicked out.
Yeah.
Basically
you were an academic probation.
And so there is I can sense the temptation there of listening to this guy because he doesn't come across like a monster, right? Like that's kind of what it is. He's very persuasive and he's very calm and he's not like, you know, cackling and twirling his mustache.
And he's just living his life on this weird isolated rock planet. You know, there's the thing where it's like, oh, yeah, the ship's just over there. Go for a swim or, you know, or wait for the tides to change or whatever. It is very creepy and strange. And it's not like I'm always impressed when they find a new way to create a interesting good villain in Star Wars, because they recycle a lot. The first place they go is recycle a trope. And every now and then somebody comes along and is like, I've got a new idea. And they're like, get out of here. But like he does not have a cult of people. He's not standing in front of an army. He's not giving a huge speech. He has this weird borderline seductive kind of thing that he is doing that is strange, but he is just living on, he's living this weird little space monk life here. And, you know, he's just asking some questions about the government.
Yeah. Spot on. Like, very seductive, very charismatic.
Very well done. Yeah, you know, to your point, I think that's a good point, Tony. He's the monk life he's leading is more like almost ascetic, you know, to the point of kind of what you think of the Jedi often as, as monks withdrawn from the world and in their own little order. Yeah. And he's almost kind of taking that to a higher level of like, oh, I just live in a cave making myself some soup.
And helmets, because they do have a what is it called when you have a vein of that ore?
Cortosis.
Mm-hmm. Cortosis, yeah.
Yeah,
and even he's not even like when Luke is living on possibly the same planet or a nearby planet, there are those like fish monks, like you get the sense that it's like he's mooching off those fish monks. But the stranger, it's like Thoreau I'm gonna go live in isolation, like 20 miles down the street, and my mom's gonna bring me a sandwich every day.
Eat it,
Henry David Thoreau.
The other part that was interesting was the discussion about, you know, using, again, what we've heard plenty of times before in Star Wars lore is like accessing part of the Force using strong emotions like anger and stuff. And I enjoyed, you know, she kind of tries to rebut that with being like the dark side, whatever. And he's like, semantics, you know, like,
Well, and again, it goes back to like we've been sort of talking throughout, at least I've been talking about the idea of organized religion. He very much talks about there's only, regardless of the emotions you use, that you're taught there's only one way to access the Force, and that's why you think that if you don't keep doing that, you will lose the Force. And that kind of draws back on that conversation we had when she was going for the walk in the woods in the first place, that she felt like the Force was coming back to her, which was a question like, well, what was she doing? Oh, and we also real quick, one of the most interesting and startling comments in the entire show was the idea that, why were you kicked out? Well, there's a powerful, Saul's so powerful. It's like, the stranger says, that's your power. I'd love to know what you guys thought he meant by that.
Well,
or if it's something more insidious going on.
Doesn't he say something about her, Saul finding her because he was so powerful? And I thought that was the comment that spurred it. And he says, that's your power, suggesting to me that it was not Saul being super strong and finding her so much as she is like a, you know, a bright light because her power is strong. And this is the debate over the power fading and whatever that means. Like, do you really lose your powers if you stop training? There is a lot of Star Wars lore that seems to suggest that is not true.
Also, I feel like there's kind of, from Osha's point of view, she's kind of like a failure, right?
Right.
She's working as a ship tech, and she's, you know, presumably could have had some magic superhero life if something had worked out better, if she had met some criteria, if she had worked harder, done something, and has kind of failed. And, you know, her life did not seem great. I mean, she was literally doing work that it's like, we don't actually have people do that work. It's too dangerous. We lie about it. Like, that's probably not a great job to have. And he's like, oh, yeah, you're basically, the Jedi didn't understand you because you're too powerful. Mm. Right.
You know? Which is the kind of thing you say when you're trying to groom somebody.
Possibly kidnap somebody. Yeah. I mean, it is interesting, again, because we see this is a version, it is a much softer version of the Sith, of the dark side. We haven't seen him like siphon the life energy out of an adorable animal. We haven't seen him throw lightning at somebody. We haven't seen him force choke somebody who messed up his lunch. He's clearly doing, he still has a mask that has a giant grin on it and, you know, wears black robes, but he's not walking around,
doing a lot of goths, Tony. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. It's just a style thing. He murdered a lot of people, but you know.
Yeah, no one in the Adams family is a Sith. We wouldn't claim that, right? No, it's just. I see Kat's running through the inventory in her head, thinking about it one by one. Now,
I think it's an open question of whether he even is a Sith. He makes a comment, right, where she asks what he wants, and he says the power of two. Mm. And I know there's also, you know, the rule of two obviously being the Sith thing where you have to have two. Mm-hmm. But to me, I read that more as a generic thing of like, there's two of us, two, you know, we're stronger together, essentially. Like, I don't want to be alone / I want somebody else who's kind of in this with me.
So seems like, I mean, I think there's two possible, there's a variety of possible things going on here. But I think some questions that this episode is posing, I think there's the more straightforward reading is, he wants an acolyte. Mm-hmm. He thought it would be May. Mm-hmm. That didn't really work out. And so now his energies are focused on Osha. And he wants an acolyte because he does not want to be alone.
Theory one?
For whatever reason. Yep.
What's your theory? Because I got two more theories after this one.
Yeah,
I got
with you.
Other theories.
See if we're all going to the same places.
Hey, who taught this guy? Is he the acolyte in the show, The Acolyte? Is there going to be a possibly portrayed by an actor who's identified as cast in the show, but not yet appeared that we're going to see? And then I guess theory three, which I've seen, which I thought about, and then I saw fan stuff about, which I think I'm not would be surprising to me. Is this guy Darth Plagueis? Is he, you know, is he very old because he has immortality? Is he going to be, you know, is he eventually, are we going to see, I don't know, little baby Palpatine as his as his eventual acolyte or apprentice? Mm. I don't understand why you would make a show that is so its own thing to then tie back into like a part of Star Wars lore that's not very exciting, right?
I like those theories. I would be most interested by T2 because I don't know who that other actor is. I have a I would not be surprised if I do T3. That was theory 1, 2, 3 with a T in the front of it, so we know it's Tony 1, 22, 23.
Not Terminator 2, which you also
and so I would not be surprised if they go down to T3, but I'd be a little disappointed by that, but I would understand it. My theories, I have two theories, K1, K2. K1 is that
T stands for Tony and theory.
Yes, okay, sorry. When we get to you, it will be D1, D2, D3.
Got it.
So K1 is that this is actually the long con, and in fact that the stranger took May in the hopes that he would in the long term get Osha. And or sort of sub theory of K1 is knowing they had to be combined, knew this was like a 20-year game and going down that path. Mm-hmm. I think that's unlikely to put up there. K2 isn't so much
in some kind of force blender at the end.
Yeah, exactly. K2, and this is sort of more of a question than a theory, is like, I want to know how many fanfics have been written in the past 6 days about the stranger and Osha. Because it feels like they had a lot of chemistry there, and I'm like shipping them a little bit, which I don't know how I feel about. I'll pass it to Dan now.
Always shipping the villains, Kat.
if only been played by Ben Barnes, you would have been all over it.
Justice or Blue Leader.
That's different. That's Ben Daniels. I was thinking Ben Barnes is the guy from Shadow and Bone, the evil guy.
Oh, him. Yeah, no, he was he was cast for you to be shit. Anyways.
we'll consider my earlier comment, my first theory about like him just looking for somebody else to share this with him. That's D1.
D1, but that's very similar to T1.
Yeah, but I said first.
So. I know. But my other one
was very
parallels.
similar to K1, I think.
D2 is similar to K1. Yeah. Got it.
Someone out there will make a chart.
This segment is garbage.
No, my second theory is, I think, similar to yours, which is that there's something about the intrinsic power of May and Osha in whatever Anasaya did to potentially create them, as we know. Something about that, something that Kalnaka was studying.
As a mystery. Yeah. I'm assuming we're going to get in the next episode.
I would assume that has to be paid off. Like,
because the power of two could be not necessarily him and an acolyte. It could be the two of them.
Yes, yeah. I think that is my other theory, is that there's something inherent in the fact that they have this connection. Whether they're the same soul that's been split apart or what have you, or two, you know, equal parts of something. That whole mystery, I think, may be tied into it. Maybe he's thinking, I can get a lot of power out of this, and I need one or both of them, preferably both. But it is deliberately ambiguous, and I think that is those are all good theories, and I'm kind of curious to see how it plays out. I do think there's a possibility that this ends up being... So... The one thing, I hate to go back to this because I think it was an annoying story.
Boba Fett?
No, not that. never that. So we know the life creation thing that was sort of alluded to in the flashback episode has an echo in Anakin's birth, where he is also created somehow.
Do you think Anakin has a twin?
No, but I think that maybe the answer is, does Palpatine learn that somewhere? Maybe from this dude? Like, is that skill being somehow passed down here?
Do we ever know that Darth Plagueis is a guy?
No, I don't. Well, he's Darth Plagueis the Wise.
in canon is it ever referred to? So, like, K3 is that it's
Dan
like,
is implying that only a man would be referred to as the eyes.
Yeah, I got that implication there pretty clearly.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a picture of him on Wikipedia, so of enjoy that. Him, that's from Star Wars Legends.
Yeah, that's... Who drew this picture, Dan? That's not... He's, you know...
It's a really terrible picture.
What
we've
it is,
never
it's
seen
OSHA
him.
And May doing, like, 9 to 5 going on there. So they hire, like...
Yeah. Yeah, it's...
They've hired someone to play Darth Plagueis on their behalf.
Yeah, Revenge of the Sith, he's mentioned...
That's not 9 to 5, that's Working Girl, right? What am I getting this confused with?
Sorry,
I don't know.
It's not 9 to 5. Is it Working Girl where they hire... 9 to 5 is where they have horrible bosses.
Yes.
Which is the one where they hire...
Working Girl's the one with Harrison Ford, right?
Okay, so they don't 9 to 5. They're going to Working Girl this, and they're going to hire... That's the point.
Which is different
than... Pretty Woman.
Not to be confused with Weekend at Bernie's. That's when they're dead. So, there's a lot of cons.
Okay, you know, that's true. Yeah. You ever pull a Weekend at Bernie's?
Snoke was basically a Weekend at Bernie's, right?
A little bit.
I mean, a little bit. I don't know why he had to be a guy in the end. He could have just been a hologram.
That movie was so bad.
You know, it's okay to set out to make 3 movies and not have a plan. It turns out you get paid either way. So, just, you know, put stuff together.
I'm just really enjoying... So, Darth Plagueis has a Wikipedia, not Wikipedia, straight up Wikipedia entry. And I enjoyed it under the reception section. The only line is, despite never appearing on screen, Darth Plagueis has remained a popular Star Wars character. The scene in which the character is mentioned in Revenge of the Sith has become an internet meme.
Oh, really? What's the meme?
Oh, it's, have you ever heard the tale of Darth Plagueis the Wise, says Palpatine. And I know people meme that to like a bunch. Have you ever heard the tale of something, something, something? Anyways. So, yeah.
Good times.
Anything else, or should we move on to our
I feel like we are thoroughly off the rails since we started this episode.
Let's head to listener mail.
Yay!
All right. From the not rail to listener mail. It's something.
I enjoyed this. I'm enjoying this show. It's fun. It's interesting. There's a lot to say.
Yeah, same. I mean, this episode's quieter. It feels a little bit more table setting for the next episode, but it's still, I like it as a contrast to last week's episode.
Yes.
It's a breather.
You need a pace.
They can't murder like 10 more people. You can't. It's just not a sustainable trajectory for every episode we murder half of our team.
I don't know if you guys noticed, but so on our Discord channel, right, we had something like 42 comments on the last episode of It's a Complicated Profession. I think 41 of them were about whether it was or was not too much to kill all the red shirts, which was great.
There's also a big discussion elsewhere about like the morality of like, should Saul have killed the stranger
when
he had the chance?
Yes, I don't think that's a question. I think the answer is if he was going to, for me again, it came by the fact, if he wasn't going to kill him, don't then kill all the beetles at the same time, right? Like such, it just doesn't make any sense of the Jedi code.
I feel like all lives should be sacred.
He only killed one beetle.
He set it up the situation so that many beetles would die.
OSHA did it.
OSHA takes the light and puts it on.
OSHA takes
okay.
the light and slaps
okay.
it on his back.
Okay. Yeah. I feel and significantly I, better about Saul then. You're totally right.
And my takeaway from that whole episode is basically like, let us point out that like the Jedi code is actually like basically untested reality.
Yeah.
Yes.
And like literally this guy murdered like a dozen people and is laughing about having just murdered a child. And you won't bonk him on the head because of your code.
And the stranger even comments on that. And that was the great line when he comes out of the water and says like, are you wondering, is it, if you kill me on the spot when sort of like I'm holding
the heat of the battle,
in the heat of battle, it's justified. I forget the exact word.
But hours later,
it's
revenge,
rather.
Yeah. I think it's a
great
point.
It was so good.
Yeah. There's an interesting morality play happening there, which I enjoy because it is the level of how far does your code go? And is it something that you stick to? Are you made by your code? Or do the exceptions prove the rule or whatever?
Yeah. And so I think I agree with you. I think it was a slower episode, which is nice. Kind of like the sorbet between courses. And it was,
soup course.
But yeah, I think the scenes on the unknown planet were exceptional in sort of driving the plot on the conversation. I even enjoyed the scenes back on the Carlock. Oh, I can't remember the names.
No, Carlock is the character from Baldur's Gate 3.
Anyway, the planet with the Wookiee. The only thing I think that was a little weak was the OSHA Saul, May Saul stuff.
Yeah, I think they felt like they really wanted to get that parallelism in there where it's the masters with the opposing pupils, like, and it didn't quite work.
That's what they were thinking as they were filming the scene where, like, a small otter hugs her leg. It's like, we need this for the parallel. No, you know, I don't like it. The otter doesn't like it, but we need it for the parallelism.
You know, so, a lot of people a lot of people give grief to Star Wars for that, but, like, I'd like to remind everybody, Star Wars was also always kind of goofy. Remember?
Yeah.
There's always a small space otter running around.
I'm not complaining about it.
Well, not you. That wasn't to you. That was to the internet.
I enjoyed Basil. I just didn't really understand Basil's motivation.
Like squirts like lubricant in her eye.
No, because
I don't know.
Basil should have just run to Saul and said, Basil, like, Saul, this isn't her.
My reading of it, my generous headcanoning of it is Basil and Saul are both in shock. Like the entire and that takes place over 20 minutes is Basil is like, I don't know what to do. I don't know who to tell. I don't know who I can trust. I'm unclear if Basil even knew that Saul was on the ship. He's like,
there's like a scene
around
where he runs out when Saul comes in or something.
Yeah.
And my headcanon was like, he tells him off screen. Like that was kind of my headcanon, but it's not.
But also maybe
you shouldn't have to leave
that
to me.
I was not even sure, like, because they did kind of like shine a light on like Yord, who's dead, can speak Basil's language.
Yeah.
Can anyone else?
I'm sure the universe turns better. But yeah, no, but I think you're absolutely right. I think Saul is in shock and that shows. And I think your question is Basil has to ascertain first if Saul knows it's May and is a willing accomplice.
Does Basil know what's going on, or is Basil just suspicious? I mean, like, unfortunately, we hear nothing from Basil because he doesn't speak common. So we don't know. We see him navigating using a workbench that is not ergonomical for his body type. You know, I mean, Basil's doing his best. Is what we have to.
At some point, Saul lets May fly the ship, which feels like I trust you, fly the ship. And also then has her go fix it because assuming it's OSHA, OSHA would know how to fix it. I don't know. There's a lot of, it's confusing.
Yeah. Anyways.
There's a lot of, you know, like everyone hit their head as they were getting on the ship.
Yeah. Write in if you have a good theory on how that entire, all those vignettes string together in a cohesive narrative. We would love to hear it.
So it starts with a gas leak.
Okay. the gas leak season.
Reference acknowledged.
reference
to Community.
It's a reference to the show Community, where there was a season where Dan Harmon, the creator, left, and they refer to it as the year where there was the gas leak.
Because he was unhappy with how the characters acted.
Some comments. I'm going to start with our Mastodon comments this week, where you can find us at ECP at Zeppelin.flights. Wired for Flight responded to say that this the best episode of the season. I don't know if they meant our show or last week's episode of The Acolyte. I'm taking it to mean our show. Alex writes in,
very generous of you, Dan, with somebody else's words.
That's how we roll. Alex writes in to say, fun observation about the fight between Kamir and the Jedi. You talked about how the Jedi felt easily because Kamir fought unfairly, based on how Yord described it. Jackie seemed to hold their own against Kamir by themselves, and maybe that's because she's a Padawan, a smart one too, and not yet fully settled in the complacency of the majority of the Jedi Order.
I like that. I like that
totally
a lot.
Indoctrinated.
Yeah. That's good.
Grimghost wrote in, yes, I watched Moonlighting when young. We're still doing it. Favorite quote from the show is Bruce Willis, if a guy gets blown to bits, shouldn't there be bits of guy?
Okay. Wow.
There you go.
Kind of feels like a Die Hard quote too.
You know what? Not wrong. Alex also wrote in to say the enjoyment I get from the chaos you three bring to the beginning, middle, and end of the episodes is hard to quantify.
Wait till you hear this one.
Woof. Daniel, not me, writes in, I checked in briefly with angry Star Wars fandom and saw the show was still horrible, and how dare they have two episodes in a row that were only 30 minutes. I hate to reference Woody, but all I could think was, and such small portions. Yeah, classic. Woody Allen. The food here is terrible. And such small portions.
Thank you.
Classic joke. I don't even know if Woody Allen can be attributed to that.
I wasn't sure if that was... I thought that might be pre-existing. Yeah. I thought that was like the Marx Brothers.
Yeah, that feels like a classic sort of Borscht Belt joke. Yeah. Rob writes in, the more I think about all the dead witches in Destiny, the less sense it makes. So I went back and rewatched the scene a couple of times. Mm. They don't look like they were killed by the fire or by lightsabers. Poison, maybe? Some kind of psionic attack or mass force
lightning?
Joke? They're doing a good job of keeping me guessing. While I was there, I rewatched the argument about Osha leaving. She didn't want to be a Jedi despite having to leave Mei. She actively wanted a life that wasn't shared with Mei. My own twin daughters both have the shared slash separate preference in different proportions at different times, but Osha and Mei being more polarized also rings true. Interesting perspective, Rob.
Thank you for sharing that.
David writes, one of you said this week they kind of dropped the whole, quote, killing a Jedi without a weapon, unquote, thing, but I rather think they hung a lantern on it when Osha prevented Saul from killing an unarmed Darth Jaguars fan. So will Mei kill Saul while Saul is unarmed, thereby completing her transition to the dark side? That's a good question. Mei kills, like, there is a point where Mei seems to consider trying to make a move.
She's about to go.
She's got the knife.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we don't, obviously, she doesn't do it.
Mm-hmm. Mei pauses to remember that she is confused about her character's motivation at that moment.
Yeah. Always good. Chris Mack for you writes in, I forget if one of you mentioned this, but hearing you pronounce Chimere, I don't remember, made me think of a chimera, which refers to multiple distinct species kind of merged into one. In a show about magic twins, about one being separated into two, I wonder if there's anything there. Yeah, I think the chimera thing is, yeah, I think there's something there.
That's good. I like that. Even if there's not, it works well.
Joel posted a couple things, which I don't really understand, Joel, but thanks for writing in, including one I already showed to Kat, which is just a text thread of about watching The Acolyte, saying Acolyte tonight. I don't know what's happening there, Joel, but you seem very enthusiastic, which is great. And then a clip of our show and saying so good. So thank you for that. I didn't get a chance to watch this, but Jay Underwood wrote in to say, I made a real dumb video that only makes sense if you're both fan of both The Acolyte and The Good Place. I hope you like it. I didn't get a chance to watch it yet. It's called Darth Jason.
Can you share with us?
I will share it with all of you. Yes. Or at least you two. I guess I'll put a link in the show notes too.
You have to now because you said you would share it with all of us.
I mentioned I would share it with everybody and I will bring enough for the whole class. Finally, Trevor writes in to say, why does the secret Sith island have a series of giant abandoned tunnels? The hatches and pipes in those tunnels would have taken civil engineers and contractors to build that out. Where do they get the funding for something like that? There must be a Lost style backstory to it that, oh, look, a lightsaber whip. Anyway, I'm getting annoyed with how much they are drawing things out. When are we going to find out how Basil is going to save the day? Hashtag Team Basil.
I'm the theory that they are like lava tubes, essentially. And that they're naturally forming caves.
I'm going with abandoned Cortosis mine.
Oh, that's possible too.
I think it's like everywhere has basically abandoned early. Like every planet in Star Wars has been tried to be colonized like 5 times. Mm. And it's like, you know. Oh. So there's just all kinds of stuff hanging. Because that's what, isn't that what the sand crawlers are? Aren't they basically like, we tried to do something on Tatooine and we left these here for the Jawas basically because we gave up. I think there's just a lot of abandoned clear cutting.
Here's my theory. Here's my theory is they came to mine the Cortosis. Like, we found this cool metal. Let's do something with it. But because they didn't need to fight anybody with lightsabers or block force powers.
Or maybe the Jedi shut it down.
I was thinking there's just a bunch of people who are like, this metal's kind of useless. It's hard to work with, and it doesn't really seem to have any properties that we know anything about, so let's just leave.
Well, I like to think, too, that when they establish, it's you need to bring fresh food with you, because otherwise it you're living on rations.
Those,
so they brought ports.
Those rock elephant things are awful to eat.
Yeah, they look real chewy. The porgs, though, delicious.
I did appreciate when Osha puts on, we didn't talk about this, but when Osha puts on the helmet
at
the end, and we get the, because he mentions, he references the Yoda quote. I mean, it's not a Yoda quote yet, but the it's only what you bring with you, which is the same thing Yoda says to Luke at the cave, and that it helps you close you off from like the rest of the thing and sort of like taps you into the Force. Obviously, her breathing is kind of Vader-ish.
Mm-hmm.
But also I appreciated the shot out of it. Sounds a lot. It looked very much like what I read Manny Jacinto describing as the actual view out of that. He's like, it was really hard to actually look. It's really hard to see out of, and it's really hard to breathe in.
I imagine, you need to be using, you sense with the Force, because you can't see through those tiny little eye holes.
It's a little bit the blast shield from A New Hope, Luke there. So interesting stuff there. We also got some emails to our email address, which is acp@theincomparable.com. This one's from Fallen in Sea. Howdy, folks. Tony, Kat, and Dan. I'm sorry I was a few episodes behind and I'm just catching up, but I think Tony made a comment on why anyone would be listening to this show and not actually watching the Star Wars show being covered a few episodes back.
You are a hostage and you cannot reach the phone to turn off the podcast.
Well, hi. Here I am. How are you guys doing? I bet I'm not the only one. I keep coming back to the show mainly because of the dynamics between you all. My favorites are Tony and Kat go off on a tangent and poor Dan tries to regain control.
Kat, that reminds me of a time.
Yeah, yeah. How was your day, by the way? Did you go for a walk?
No, it was great. I did. You know, it was okay. Went outside. It was a little humid.
It's so what humid about you? Right now.
Yeah,
it's good. We went up to Marblehead and went for the arts festival. It was nice.
That was a lot of fun. I had a really great time. But Dan, even better is when they, Tony and Kat, drag Dan into their madness and the show fully goes off the rails for a while. I'm an incomparable supporter and this show came across the super feed, so I listened to it. This was when I was still subscribed to Disney Plus in the early Mandalorian days, I think, and I've been hooked ever since. I keep saying how I will go and watch the show you're talking about, but there's just so much TV out there right now. I never seem to get back to watch it. I'm still trying to get caught up on Moonlighting and Remington Steele. Have you ever watched White Collar, or is that too recent for your murder crime of the week show?
So
Kat,
good.
You want to take that one?
I love White Collar. So
I've
good.
I've watched
so
all White
good.
Collar.
Yes, we rewatched it during the pandemic, I believe.
Well, no, I
you watched
watched
it for the first
it.
Time.
The first
I rewatched
time.
It. Yeah,
great show.
Yeah. And why can't I get the Pergolin Squiggs logo on a polo? Wouldn't that be more professional than a T-shirt? You should get all these. You all should get these on a business card.
Tony is actively, I think, working on that.
I'm looking.
Like,
hold on. Are polos available? I'm not sure. I'll look into that.
Oh, and one final Every time you guys said May on this week's episode, I kept picturing Melinda May, Ming-Na Wen, from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I have no clue why. Because she's awesome. That's fine. Thank you, Fallen and C. Appreciate the letter.
No, that's good. And if there's of the Star Wars, if you can't watch all of it, just watch Andor. Literally, just watch Andor.
Yeah. I would prioritize it. It's true. Tristan. Tristan writes, Acolyte Episode 6 follow-up. Hello again. OSHA's logic. I just saw this guy murder several Jedi, including some of my friends, and he trained my sister to be a murderer, but he's hot and he made soup, so I guess he's okay. Now that we're 3/4 of the way through the show, I have two major thoughts about the show and Disney Star Wars as a whole. One, this feels like Star Wars via the CW. Two, evil will always triumph because good is dumb. Lord Dark Helmet Spaceballs, 1907. So much of this feels like the plot driving the characters, not the characters driving the plot. Anyway, biff, 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 biff. That's not a rating, just rambling in a drunken stupor. Tristan, P.S. I don't know why you still read my emails. Because I'm contractually obligated to.
Yes, yes. Yeah, I don't know what the plot or the character on the plot. I can make that argument.
And that's not invalid, just to be clear. Plot-driven, character-driven, I think there are... Those are different genres and different ways to approach stories.
Yeah, I think this is very... It's plot-driven, I would agree with that, but I think at least the characters are evolving along the way, which makes it enjoyable. But yeah, I mean, soup and hot guy sounds pretty good. I mean, not bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I watched a lot of CW shows, and they certainly are a formula.
Yeah.
I don't think this quite falls into that, but
It's got a little bit of it, though.
It's not without it, but those shows were so formulaic by the end that they were literally paint by numbers.
I fought for them, though, every single time, and it took me forever to realize. I watched all of Vampire Diaries. I watched, 2.5 seasons of Kung Fu. Vampire Diaries is good, Tony. Don't laugh at me. It was good, I think.
Did I say anything?
There was a lot of shade coming from over there.
I did not say anything. Also, Dan is leaning far away from you and it suggests
I was getting the water, but I was going to point out that Tony and I have almost certainly watched more seasons of CW shows than that.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
True. You guys have seen
also,
all of
I will say, I don't know anything about Vampire Diaries, but I'm just going to assume that statistically, I've watched worse vampire media out there.
I think
I've watched a lot of vampire media.
It starts off with Dark, it's fun, and then people just keep dying. But the thing about the CW is you're so focused on one big bad character, and you finally get the big bad character, and CW in the exact same breath is like, oh, not this character. The real person you're going is after this character, and it just keeps going. Yeah. And it's like watching that fractal fold in on itself, and because it's so fast paced, you never stop to realize wait a second,
this
never ends.
Yeah.
And,
I've watched
all TV.
So many shows.
There's a lot of TV. The average for TV is pretty bad. There exists a lot of good TV out there. You don't have to watch good TV all the time, and good TV is relative for different people. I think it is. I do feel a little sad for people who watch TV that doesn't perhaps challenge them. Like, if you just watch CW shows all the time and you're not a teenager, that's I think a little sad, because there is always that thing where it's like, is this network for teenagers or is it about teenagers for?
I just want to point out,
CW's for teenagers.
It was definitely aimed at teenagers. But I will point out, the CW now is not what the CW was even a few years ago.
What is the CW now?
Very little. They've actually scrapped almost all their original programming.
Really?
Yeah.
They got bought.
It's okay. I think it's okay to, it's okay to watch TV that just makes you feel okay about the grim reality that is our world. Yeah. That for me is episodes of Star Trek The Next Generation. It's like, this gets me to another day. Not everything has to be Andor or other prestige
Deep Space
TV
Nine.
Things that are going, not everything has to like comment on like the power structures of the world and make you think about truth and conflict and how you perceive everything that you do in your life.
We all like it's a donut or some ice cream once in a while.
And it's good to get some of all of that. I don't think there's anything wrong with CW shows. I think they do what they, and like, what, like, how big a jump is there from CW shows to your USA characters welcome era of shows, which I think also
I was
doesn't
just thinking
exist
about
anymore.
That, the blue sky
right?
stuff.
Like,
the blue that was white collar, right?
Yep.
Yeah, that was white collar and
Psych,
covert affairs.
Burn Notice.
Dan,
I can name all. I watched
all
most of them.
Yeah. And
I enjoyed them. They were fun.
They're fine. They're not going to like challenge you. None of them is like reading a book. But also, guess what? Not all books are amazing. sorry, books. Now I come for you.
And I do think I do think there is a little bit of but going back to the comment, right? That there's, I can see a little bit of the CW of a little bit of like the gloss that is worth on a CW show. I think less about the big bad.
Some
the big
of it's
bad
even
the
just
big
having
bad.
young characters
who are like trying to figure themselves out. Right, that's very CW.
And introspective. Yeah.
And it's, I think we exist in a challenging time for Star Wars where, like, I think everybody wants Star Wars to be exactly one thing, and Star Wars will never be that.
I'm going to use
it
as a segue
lots of
point.
Things for other people. And I will say even sometimes it's like, the recent new Doctor Who series, which was paid for by Disney, wrapped up. And it's like, that is a show that is a lot of things. And probably one of the big things it is it's like intended for like families and young people to enjoy. And Star Wars will always have that. And the challenging thing is, if you are say middle aged, you're like, why is this stuff that children would appeal to? And it's like, because Star Wars, and that's what it used to do. And it, guess what, it's just still doing it. You're the problem, but Dan is putting a pin in it.
Because I'm bringing back to our final letter, which is the one I alluded to earlier, which is from Carlitos. It's a bit long, but bear with me because I think there's some interesting stuff in here. Hello, Star Wars pals. Having just finished watching episode 6 of The Acolyte, I can confidently say this is the Star Wars we need. As a lifelong Star Wars fan, I'm enjoying it tremendously, and I think it's the most Star Wars live action we've got so far.
Ooh.
Parentheses. It's more a feeling than anything in particular. If you don't agree, maybe you should, stretch out with your feelings. The pacing.
I'll see that point. Yeah.
The pacing, the cinematography, the characters, the fresh yet familiar setting, the cast, the acting, the music, even the lighting is just perfect. So to Kathleen Kennedy, who we know listens to the podcast, I say, please give Leslie all the money and Star Wars will be fine. Anyway, here are my thoughts on episode 6, Teach/Corrupt. 1, I'm calling it Darth Jason's, parentheses, I'm not calling him the stranger and neither should you. Darth Jason's master is the Green Lady Vernestra for 2 reasons.
Ooh.
A, it's heavily implied that DJ is older than he looks, perhaps by using the dark side to extend his lifespan, and we know from the High Republic material that so is Vernestra. And B, this was the point I wanted to illuminate earlier, the scar on his back is sinuous and irregular, like a certain retractable lightsaber whip combo we saw in this episode, for no really good reason. That was the one that got me, because I thought that was a great catch, and also, why did we see that in this episode?
Good. That's good. Well done.
2, DJ's helmet is some sort of force artifact and not just a hat. You clearly can't see anything through it. DJ tells Osha that when you wear it, quote, it's just you, the Force, and what you bring with you, unquote, which is what Yoda tells Luke before he enters the Happy Fun Cave of Fun Times in Dagobah in ESB.
Where all the dead people are buried.
Yep. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't even rule out that the helmet is somehow connected to the sinkhole of adventure Rey falls into in TLJ. Yes!
Yeah, they're all connected through Ezra portals that that hook into Lothal. Each of them has a Force wolf looking over it.
Three, there's something not right with Master Saul. Footnote, it can't be a coincidence his name is spelled Saul but pronounced like the capital of South Korea when we know Lee Jung-jae learned English just for this show, right? I don't think he'll survive the series. Lee Jung-jae is mesmerizing as Master Saul, and I want him on every Star Wars from now on, but he's evidently a very flawed Jedi, no matter how much he tries to hide it, so I don't think he'll make it. Finally, every episode I wait, so far in vain, for Dan to say something about the show's music. I'm a musician by trade and a huge soundtrack nerd, and I have so many things to say about this show's soundtrack, but I'll just say one. It's remarkable how Michael Abel's score manages to be original, yet incredibly Williams-y, especially in its instrumentation, string, brass, and especially woodwinds. And Dan, if you feel like you don't have enough podcasts in your life and would like to discuss the soundtrack with a fellow music nerd, you know where to find me. Thanks a lot for the podcast. Sorry for the long email. I was born in a huge South American city where I nursed my love for Star Wars, but I live in a tiny village in the Slovenian countryside now. Wow. So I have no local friends with whom to geek about Star Wars. So yeah, even though we've never met and probably never will, I do consider you to be my Star Wars pals. Love.
Yay!
Carlitos. Carlitos, if you didn't come to this somehow through Andrzej Tomic, you should go find Andrzej Tomic, who lives in Slovenia, because he's a lovely guy. Anyways, there was a lot in there.
Oh, that was a great letter.
But it's a really good email.
Yeah, I agree with the emotion. Like, this does feel, I will give you full credit, I do agree, this feels the most, like, natural successor of Star Wars within the same, of the original series, of just, like, flowing very naturally from that. Fully agree.
There's a lot in here. I'm going to hold back some conclusions until we've seen the end of the show, but I do have some thoughts about overall pacing and some things here and there that I would tweak, but there's a lot that I like about this show, from the premise to the a lot of the acting performances. I saw a friend make some derogatory comments about this on social media that I did not agree with about the production quality. I think it looks pretty good.
Well,
I don't
think
it's necessarily,
It's not Andor,
which is a very different style.
Yeah,
but
this
is still really good.
I find that this one, the background here to me is very like watercolors, right? We don't spend a lot of time in the background, just needs to be there. But what's in the foreground is usually incredibly powerful. Like, again, the ocean that Manny is swimming in is, it's just beautiful, right? It just, it feels so real. And like, I don't need the long open vista shots of like lighting the towers of the fires of the Rohirrim, right? No, this is very, it's good. I want to focus on the people
it
in the story.
It looks like Star Wars to me. I mean, I think the thing that set Andor apart was Andor was very interested in showing you the people of these places. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this show is not, because it's not about the world, right? I mean, for example, you know, we had this, this episode had the scene. It had one of those scenes which always, they shoot it on the volume, I assume. There's the scene where they're like talking to the guys that live on the planet, and they're like, this is what they told us. And I was like, you know, those guys almost didn't need to exist. And it was just them in front of a backdrop with woods in the background.
It's hard to
tell. And it was like,
this show doesn't look as shot on the volume as the Mandalorian or Boba Fett shows did to my eye. And some of it's definitely on location. The stuff in Madeira, the ocean, all of that's real.
Yeah.
Or at least shot on location with mats and all that stuff, stuff digitally composited in, but it's somewhat shot on location. I will say, I think some of it is a stylistic thing. Andor, like Rogue One, feels very down and dirty and tight shots,
it's
handheld
city,
cameras sometimes.
Cities,
too.
And we're going to show you all the people, right?
It's great.
And this is like, no, we are focused on our set of characters.
This
right?
looks to me, and I don't mean this as a dig, but it looks more like the prequels to me. And that makes sense from an era point of view.
Yeah.
Like, stuff's a little more polished, stuff's a little more sci-fi. Yeah. And I don't think that's a negative. I think it's just, it doesn't look like the Empire era, because that has
I would agree with that.
I think about this episode, we had all those scenes that are in the various nooks and crannies of the Jedi spaceship, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's a type of spaceship we've never seen before, or at least I don't recognize. And it's like, it's laid out differently than other spaceships. but it looks like a Star Wars spaceship, right? It's got the same, you know, lighting and the same shapes and textures and whatnot. They've just been reconfigured for a different space. Yeah. And that, to me, it instantly reads as Star Wars.
Yeah, I find that there's nothing weird nor particularly stand out. It's just sort of, mm-hmm. it codes itself as that just to like fade quickly into the background.
And it's I think Andor did a really amazing sense with its sense of place. Mm. Whereas the places that we go to for this are a little less.
They're a little more Star Warsy. Like, but, they're a little more, like, it's a generic. Forest planet. It's
But I do think, again, their shots of, like, on Madeira and stuff are really, really stunning. And presumably, Skellig Michael.
For example, you know, I remember almost nothing about whatever the name of that planet is where the meditating Jedi died that we spent quite a while on. And, like, they were in the streets and there was a chase. And it's like, I couldn't tell you anything about that. Other than it seemed to be the place where we put our not-so-great B-Team Jedi or stationed here. But I couldn't really tell you that much about, like, the environment of it or anything that made it felt different from any other place.
I will say, I do love Carlito's theory that, we're just going to go with MJ, is the
DJ?
DJ. Darth Jason.
Michael Jackson? Michael Jordan.
Well, it's many
just Mark Jones. But you were saying Darth Jason. So
I was going with MJ. MJ, DJ, Mary DMJ. Anyways, that he was the Padawan of the Green Lady. I think that's very astute.
That's true.
Especially if she's super talented, perhaps advanced beyond her.
Motivation that it very personal that she, if she is running the Jedi from Lily's political standpoint, she cannot have her Padawan, it ever come out that her Padawan has fallen. Most
this
of all, that her Padawan polished the dark side, right?
Ends like, with that Jedi intern pushing like a big box of paperwork through a warehouse.
100%.
Where it's never seen again.
Yeah, it gives a really, I think we talked at the beginning of this, like, oh, why are they, like, everyone's fine. Like, this isn't really showing the Jedi on their way to the collapse. But I think the biggest takeaway about this, the show actually really might be about the cover up rather than anything else.
Yeah, I think that's 100% right because it does feel. The way that she investigates when she's down there and the fact that she knows, that, like she mentions, she sent Saul there, which we know, like this all does, and like her, like she's a little bit deer in the headlights, a little bit like,
did we leave people the oven are gonna, on?
Yeah, did I forget to deal with that apprentice like, that I kicked out?
Yeah.
Who maybe been using the dark side?
Way too important to be like, yeah, I'm getting on a ship and going right now. And well, I guess the intern, that.
She gets
the intern,
seasick.
The intern even like adds like, aren't you way too important / hyperspace seasick to go? And so it's like they hang a lantern on. It's a big deal that she's leaving.
Yeah.
Also, it apparently not a long flight to get there.
I mean, speed of plot.
Yeah.
I think I think that works on several levels. So I will not be surprised at all to see her having to have a face off with the stranger at the end and be like. Yeah, you kicked me out. And she's like, well, you were evil. Sorry. But yeah, it's going to be interesting.
Well, then in which case, I do wonder if the plot then becomes if we do. Okay, so.
Does Saul take the fall?
Yeah, well, Saul takes the fall. I assume the Green Lady kills potentially the stranger, which leaves Osha to pick up the mantle. Because Osha at that point has seen the Jedi truly just be political animals and not anything related to the original faith, which she thought they were.
I think there's an interesting question of what the ultimate outcome of for May and Osha is by the end of the season.
Do we
wrap up that story? Is there another story to be told? Leslie Headland has said she is kind of planned. She's like, we kind of just left it all on the table. Like, not to say there aren't mysteries that would be resolved in a second season, but we kind of didn't want to leave a cliffhanger. We just wanted to tie everything up.
I very much get the sense this is a one season, right? I'm almost envisioning like a Romeo and Juliet ending where everyone's.
It may or may not be. I think there may be room for. It depends how well it does too. And then finally, I will mention I haven't only listened to the first volume of the soundtrack for this is available, which covers episodes 1 through 4. I have listened to it. I don't know if I've heard all of it, but I've only listened to it maybe once. So I like the music a lot. I do think it is evocative. I agree. It's evocative of John Williams without being like straight up, let's just sort of do a continuation of John Williams. And it definitely has its own thing going on. It's not quite as melodic. It has a little more abstractness to it, but it's good. I don't know this composer at all, Michael Abels, and but I think he's done really good work here, and it blends so well into the episode that you don't think about it, but it does influence you. So I think that's kind of interesting. And then, as we said, I think we did, the one thing we did comment about it was it did feel like there was a Kylo Ren theme hat tip in there last week. So
maybe that's good.
Anyway, I think at time. Because this podcast is strictly time limited.
Again, by contract, we really should have had lawyers take a look at that one.
Yeah,
But thank you everybody who sent in some mail. We really appreciate it. You can reach us at acp@theincomparable.com or find us on Mastodon at acp@zeppelin.flights. Please send in your thoughts, your feelings, your questions, your conspiracy theories. We love it all. And I want to thank...
Please use our naming convention for all theories.
Oh, no. I especially want to thank members of The Incomparable. We really appreciate it.
Dan, how would somebody become a member?
They would go to theincomparable.com/members. They would sign up for plans, which I think start just $5 a month. I mean, it's basically nothing to hear us spout off these kinds of theories. You get a bunch of great perks, bootleg episodes, extra content, access to our member Discord. It's a lot of fun, great group of people. And you get to feel warm and fuzzy because you sent some money to your favorite hosts, because you can pick which shows you want to support. And we hope you support A Complicated Profession. Thank you. And of course, there would be no show at all if I did not have my fantastic co-host, Kat Benish. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, and call it again to the Yord Horde. Not all.
Tony Sindelar, always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
We will be back next time to talk about episode 7, but until then, may the Force be with you.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members.